Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. It is finally hoodie weather here in Ponte Vedra, so that's very pleasing. Rex, it's always hoodie weather where you are in Connecticut. You are hosting Golf Today this week, doing a fine job, I must admit. How's it going today?
I have to admit, and I grew up in the South. I was born and raised in Florida. Have not really spent a whole lot of time in the Northeast this time of year. This is a lovely week. I'm not going to lie to you. On Sunday when I landed at LaGuardia, I got lost. Coming from LaGuardia, don't ask me how. But I ended up sort of just driving through the Bronx. And it was a Sunday afternoon, and there was a lot of festivals going on. And it was 40 degrees, and every tree is perfectly fall. And I'm like, huh, okay, I get it. This is why people want to live here. Like in a couple weeks, certainly when I come up in January or February, when I make my annual trip up in the middle of the snowstorm, I'm not going to enjoy it. But Northeast, you guys are crushing it.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it a few times. I am from Canandaigua, which is one of the Finger Lakes in Western New York. I loved this time of year. This was when we had our high school golf season, and we would always end all the golf courses for the most part would close on Halloween. All the head pros would go down to Florida, and then they'd come back basically for April 1st, April Fool's Day. They would come back. So it's a very abridged fall golf season, but there's nothing better. It is wonderful. The temperatures, the leaves, the cool air, the crispness to it. I love it. I miss it. It's one of the few things that I miss about growing up in Western New York, but Northeast in the fall is absolutely one of them. Rex, a couple things I did want to get to in this midweek podcast. Wanted to start, first of all, with Michael Brennan, winner last week in Utah, 23-year-old, making his first start on the PGA Tour as a professional. And he does so winning in very impressive fashion by four shots with the most dominant performance off the tee all season. It wasn't Scotty. It wasn't Rory. It wasn't Bryson at the majors. It was Michael Brennan in Utah, who became just the seventh player since 1970 to win the PGA Tour in three or fewer starts. What was your biggest takeaway for what Michael Brennan was able to do in the fall event?
It was fun to watch because it's easy power. Sometimes in this day and age that we live in, you can tell guys are actually trying to murder the golf ball. You can tell that they're trying to maximize the distance. And he has more of an Adam Scott type swing where there is a ton of power in there. I think he had two drives over 400 yards just in Sunday's round alone. You're right. He picked up, I'm not going to get this right, 9.7 strokes on the field in strokes gained driving, which is absolutely amazing. He also putted well. I was kind of looking at the stats. I will say that golf course in Utah is not the toughest driving test. I think according to the stats after Kapalua this year, it was the second easiest just in width of fairway, but it's still intimidating.
You're either hitting in the fairway or hitting in the lava rocks.
And there's a lot of fairway to be fair for an elite player, but this, you're right. Strokes gain is relative to the rest of the field, and the rest of the field are PGA Tour players or those who are adjacent. It was a wildly impressive performance, and it's fun to watch in the fall. This is part of the conversation. You and I have kind of leaned into the idea that this fall feels like just an extended Q school. Like guys are just scrambling to get to whatever number they need to get to. Top 100 to be fully exempt going into next year. Certainly, you look at 51 through 60. If you can finish in that category through the RSM Classic, that gets you into the first two signature events of next season. That's big. Everything else that goes into it is big. But the enjoyable part to me is when you have a sponsor exemption, playing in just his third tour event, playing in just his first as a professional, it kind of shows you that those pathways are legitimate. And I sort of got into it this week on Golf Today. It's a twofold testament, and this is going to be a long-winded answer. I apologize because I'm taking your time away from you, and you hate that. However, it's a twofold testament to what the PGA Tour has created with PGA Tour U. You, being the college expert, no one is better at that than you. You know this better than anyone. The idea that it took a little while for the PGA Tour to get here, to create those pathways. And I'm not just talking about for the Gordon Sargeants who wrapped up that accelerated card and it's off to a kind of a tough start. But this wasn't the first round draft pick. This wasn't the first pick in the draft. He was number 12.
He was 12th.
And so his only pathway was through PGA Tour Americas. And he blazed a trail. He won three times in the fall before he ends up doing this. It is a testament to everything the tour has created that, okay, we're not going to ignore this pathway. On the other side of it, it's also a bit of a cautionary tale in my mind that as we get more and more into scarcity, Brian Rolup, the CEO of the PGA Tour, his word, the second key characteristic, scarcity, we don't have to interpret that too much. That means fewer events. That means fewer cards. That means fewer opportunities. As we get further and further down that pathway is only going to get more and more narrow. And my fear is always going to be, have we made it too narrow, that maybe the Michael Brennans of the world fall through it and we don't get this, who we can all agree has all the makings of a superstar on the PGA Tour.
I can tell you've been doing golf today, this week.
Too wound up.
You had about 3 minutes in order to get that take in. That's the only time during the entire hour-long show that you're going to be able to have that take. And so you were packing so much heat in that three-minute segment. And boy, well done. Chef's kiss. Kudos to you. Let's go back to Michael Brennan for a second, because I feel like you just glossed over what this kid can actually bring, right? You mentioned the easy power. This is a kid who averaged his measured driving distance, 351 yards in the thin air in Utah. I get it. However, he combined that with incredible accuracy. Just six missed fairways all week, pacing the field. Michael Brennan, though, I think you make a lot of great points in that three-minute monologue of yours. But I think Michael Brennan is most interesting because he skips now the Korn Ferry Tour, right? And he is exempt now on the PGA Tour through 2027. He's also in the Players' Championship. He's also in the PGA Championship. He's also in the RBC Heritage, the signature event on the PGA Tour. He was exempt on the Korn Ferry Tour through the three-win season that he had on the PGA Tour Americas. But to me, Rex, you mentioned sort of an elongated and extended version of Q School. I disagree, because this was more immediate and Q School is more immediate. And I'm having a really hard time sort of getting invested in what this PGA Tour Fall Series is, because I would much rather see the Michael Brennans of the world get a shot and an opportunity to alter their career trajectory than seeing some of these retreads that we see throughout the PGA Tour fall, right? Like these players who are teeing it up, there's the occasional Scottie Scheffler who's tuning up for the Ryder Cup. There's an occasional Xander Schauffele who's heading back to Japan and wins the Bay Curve. But by and large, these are players who are jockeying for a position. I have a really hard time getting emotionally invested in players who have already had 25 plus opportunities to secure their playing status. And so I like the opportunity for a Michael Brennan, who again was playing on a sponsor exemption, to break through, alter his career trajectory, skip an entire step of the professional journey and break through. The question though is how do you replicate that? How do you take what is essentially an elongated Q School series where guys are just trying to finish inside the top 100, or they're trying to get from 51 to 60, or they're trying to get from 101 to 125. And it's sort of this long slog. How do you make it more immediate? How do you crown instant winners and crown players who, at least Michael Brennan, has an opportunity to be a future star on the PGA Tour?
It's a good question. And I think this is, and it's hard for me, even after my 3 minute diatribe, and it's hard for me to be overly critical of the PGA Tour, because the system worked and this is the way the system is supposed to work. And you can't always depend on sponsor exemptions. And it actually opens the door to a broader conversation about, we've talked a lot about sponsor exemptions the last 2 years, more so about signature events, but how are they doled out? Like, what kind of patronage are we talking about here? Because normally a tournament director's default is to award those players who have always been there to support them. And we see it time and time again, certainly in the signature events, where we have leaned into the idea that maybe they shouldn't to be. Thank you very much for doing that. I appreciate it. This is the Korn Ferry Tour. And again, if we're giving out chef's kiss, this one is really good. So it was good while it lasted. That's funny. You have to give. I don't find.
It didn't last at all.
Yes. It didn't last at all. I don't find the PGA Tour social media staff to be all that savvy, but that one's pretty good. You have to admit.
Wow. Shots across the bow at our friends in Ponte Vedra. Look forward to seeing them.
I mean, they're not as good as the DP World Tour. We can all agree on that, right?
Well, yes. That's a very high bar. I do look forward to seeing our friends in the PGA Tour office on Thursday as I get my new equipment swapped over. But please continue.
But in this particular case, it's easy for you to just to go back to, okay, this veteran has always supported the tournament. He's fallen on hard times. Of course, we're going to give the sponsor exemption out. The good tournament directors, and I'll go to the Wyndham Championship and friend of the program, Mark Brazel. He goes out of his way every single year to try to find the Michael Brennans to reward him. John Deere Classic is the same way. So you have to give the folks in Utah, as well as Michael Brennan's management team, credit for opening this door, because it's hard. Those sponsor exemptions are worth more than gold this time of year, because you have to get those starts in as we get toward the back end of the season. But to your point, I don't know how you can do the immediacy of it. I know what you want. You want to be rewarded right now. What if Michael Brennan would have struggled on Sunday and finished third? I still would have argued, well, it was still an opportunity. And that,
well, then, if he finishes third, then he gets into the next PGA Tour event by finishing in the top 10.
Yeah, absolutely. So that creates a snowball effect as well. I don't mind the fact that it's only 7 events and we're already more than halfway through the fall series. I don't mind that it's a bit of a slow burn. When we started at the Pro Core Championship, I think you and I made a bit of a joke about the idea that I want to talk about all of these races and all these opportunities for the younger players. That week was about the Ryder Cup and the scouting trip that didn't particularly seem to work out for the tour. I love the fact that we're building towards the RSM Classic, because you and I both know that's my 5th major.
It most certainly is. I do think there's something interesting that is brewing on the PGA Tour. And it's obviously going to come to a head most likely in 2027, when we sort of see what this revamped PGA Tour is going to look like with Brian Rolapp's vision, with Tiger Woods and the future competition committee, what that eventual vision looks like as well. Because what the PGA Tour has said with the changes that they're doing, pertinently with 125 to 100, is that if you have a PGA Tour card, that should matter, and that you should have every opportunity for playing reps to keep your card for the following season, right? And so every move we've seen, at least recently, is sort of in that mold. And Q School, a PGA Tour Q School, does not have the best track record of being sticky. And what happens there, and the 5+ players who
means
got
sticky is
Q
in
school,
retention rates.
Correct.
Okay.
So the 5+ players, I believe, is 6 from 2024. All those players right now are currently outside the top 100 in FedEx Cup points and are looking likely to not keep their PGA Tour card. I think that helps explain why the PGA Tour is doing everything it can to try and get the most deserving guys on tour, the guys who have the track record, the guys who have sort of the longest period of sustained success, thinking that that could then help them, you know, get on tour and stay on tour. That's why you're seeing the top 20 on the Korn Ferry Tour instead of the top 25. That's why you're seeing the top 10 from the DP World Tour, guys who had to prove it all season long. That's why you're seeing the elimination of Q School from the top 5 and ties now to just the top 5. Fewer guys in the qualifying school getting and staying there. In my opinion, in sort of when you extrapolate out what the Michael Brennan situation could be, I like the idea of having sort of this churn and burn at the end of the PGA Tour membership. And I sort of equate it to an NFL team, right, that has a 53-man active roster. But if you look at it, like, look at what the Jags do. At the end of the 53-man roster, there are always roster moves. Now, some are injury-related, but some are performance-related. If you don't play well, you should drop down. And guys in the practice squad should be elevated to the active roster. So I guess one of the things that I'm thinking about is that I'm looking for moves that, by and large, can change a player's career trajectory in an interim period, and then they have an opportunity to prove it. Some might hit. Michael Brennan looks like he might be a hit. Some might fail. But at least we're introducing new characters. A PGA Tour season is a very long time, and I think it can be a little bit static among the membership. And so I don't even know what it would be, but sprinkling some of these opportunities more than just, you know, the Aeon Swing 5 and trying to get into the next 10 and just sort of parlaying that or a top 10 streak, like sprinkling in new characters throughout the year to give them a chance. Maybe they hit, maybe they don't, but I do think that can really help a static product over the course of an 8 or 9 month season.
I mean, I think what you just described is exactly the scenario we ended up in Utah with Michael Brennan, where you give them this opportunity to have a life-changing week. And if you don't deliver, that's sort of just the hierarchy of sports. That's why
sponsors,
that's why they call it,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why they call it meritocracy. Or if you end up having a Michael Brennan type weep, he has completely changed the trajectory of his career. So that's impressive. I do want to go back to the idea, and this is really inside baseball, so I'll make it quick. 101 to 125 is still a worthwhile number. I think there is an idea that you're still going to end up getting, I don't know, maybe 15 starts, but that's actually going to be two separate categories, maybe to keep an eye on. So one of those categories is going to be 101 to 110. That category probably will get 15, maybe a couple more after that starts next year. And I talked to Lonto Griffin about this at the start of the fall series at the Pro Core Championship. His argument, and here is someone who has found himself in this category a lot in his career, 15, 16, 17 starts, that should be fine. If you get 15 starts, you should be able to make a statement one way or the other. To your point, either I'm good enough to be out here this year or I'm not.
Don't you think that's sort of the problem? And we don't need to single out Lonto Griffin in particular, but one of the things that I think people really gravitate to with individual or professional sports is the cutthroat nature of it. You either make it or you don't. And I think for so long on the PGA Tour, there are either handouts and you're gifted exemptions into tournaments, or there's conditional status, there's former winner status that gets you, there's other opportunities for you to get in the field where you continually are extended lifelines. And I think having a little bit more drama, a little bit more tension, a little bit more do or die nature to the proceedings would be really beneficial. Because right now, if you're selling the fall series, you're like, yes, these are guys jockeying for their livelihood, for their playing cards in 2026. You are trying desperately to get inside that top 100. But if I'm understanding you correctly, all of a sudden, if you finish, let's say 101, you just narrowly miss by a fraction of a FedEx Cup point over the duration of a PGA Tour season, you're going to wind up with, I don't know, 3 to 5 fewer opportunities for playing starts in 2026.
Probably more than that, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, but to me, you know, that sort of dilutes the fall product, which is a dilution of the PGA Tour regular season even more. Like, I don't like that. I like drama. I like tension. I like churn and burn. I like to have some sort of immediacy to the proceedings, and it just seems like they're dragging it out and extending too many lifelines to these guys. I think they've already had ample opportunity.
The lifelines are being cut. That's what scarcity is all about, if we want to go to it. Look, we went from 125 to 100 going into next year, and who knows what the future is going to hold. It doesn't sound to me as if the Future Competitions Committee, which includes Tiger Woods or Brian Roloff, has any interest in standing still. So we could continue to see fewer and fewer opportunities, fewer and fewer events, fewer and fewer avenues. I will go back to the idea that about this time last year, J.J. Spahn was in one of those categories that you would have been almost dismissive of. And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you'd have been like, nope, he had his opportunity. You're finished.
J.J. Spahn said as much. He was literally looking at doing something else because he was 150th.
And now he's had a career. He did at the Players' Championship. Just loses a playoff to Rory McIlroy on Monday at TPC Sawgrass. Wins the U.S. Open in dramatic fashion. Was probably the one bright spot on the U.S. team at the Ryder Cup. My argument in all of this is, you have to have some sort of flexibility in this. Now, in your mind, maybe 100 is not the right number. Maybe it needs to be smaller. But there has to be some sort of flexibility. And I always go back to, and I'm not trying to pick on Sam Ryder because he is from the hood, and I have nothing but respect. But I had to look it up. So in 7 seasons on the PGA Tour, he's only finished inside the top 100 once. That was in 2023. He was 61st. And he's only finished outside the top 125 once. That was last year. He finished 127th. The rest of the time, it's been between 101 and 125. That's not going to be good enough going forward. And my argument to all of that is, we have picked an arbitrary number. That number just 12 months ago was plenty good enough to compete against the best players in the world. And you're one of the top 1% when it comes to professional golf. Now we've decided that, nope, that's not good enough. I am going to caution again, the way I started my diatribe at the beginning of this. If you continue to narrow the pathways, you're going to miss out on the next star.
I don't disagree. I would try and be inflexible with the top 100 for the cards, right? In 101 to 125, they are shipped down to the minor leagues. I think there needs to be some sort of cutthroat manner there. Where I would like to see
the cutthroat manner is there. It's 126 now. I mean, at 126, we'll probably not get any starts at all, if only a handful.
Yeah. but I don't even want to see a handful. Like if you can't cut it, then you
someone's got to make up these fields, man. Someone's got to play in these tournaments,
which I think is where you want to go with the pathways nature. I think the PGA Tour has actually done a pretty good job of adjusting. You know, you have the swing five where in theory you're trying to keep the hot guys rolling. The top 10 rule still exists where if you have a top 10 in a tournament, you can still parlay that into a tournament start. So potentially you can go on a run and change your career that way. The PGA Tour Accelerator Program captures the top college and amateur player. Like there still are pathways where I would like to see the flexibility and where you can have an opportunity to then fill in some of these fields is if the PGA Tour is going to this model, which it certainly seems like they are going to, at least they're headed in a similar direction of a top, you know, let's say 25 to 30 event schedule. It's 100 plus players. It's very uniform throughout the season with big purses. If that's going to be the case, then I would like to see some churning and burning at the end of the membership, where if you get to, I don't know, let's call it the Truist Championship, right, in May, and if you are among the top, or if you're among the bottom 5 to 10 players on the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup standings, you're out of here. Then bring in players from the Korn Ferry Tour, which again would be stronger because you were more inflexible with the top 100 cards. And so all of a sudden, if you are top performing on that circuit, then you're elevated to the PGA Tour card and you then have an opportunity to keep it rolling on the PGA Tour. That is how you can introduce new flavor, new characters, new energy for a product that I think, particularly if you go to this 25 to 30 event schedule with all of the same players, I think it runs the risk of being a little bit stale, a little bit static.
I feel like you're playing both sides, as 007 would say it, because you want the meritocracy. You want the fresh blood coming onto the PGA Tour, but you also want to create these more rigid boundaries where if it's top
100, I want boundaries at the end of the season. Yes.
But I'll circle back around. You're picking arbitrary numbers. The PGA Tour is picking arbitrary numbers. Maybe 125 wasn't the right number. Maybe 100 isn't the right number, but you have to set some sort of goals. And you also have to fill these fields with someone. So if you're making it only about those narrow pathways, I will go in and say one of your arguments is undercutting the other argument. You can't have it both ways. You can't have the hard line and start taking away all of these opportunities. You have to have it one way or the other. I don't have a problem with 101 to 125 still having some sort of status because you still have to play well. And these are still some of the best players in the world. I think we look at someone who finished 122 on the points list and think to ourselves, well, that guy's a hack. He doesn't deserve to be out there. That guy could very well be JJ Spahn next year. So let's put that into perspective as well. I will circle back around and agree with you on one front, that I like the top five, because it at least gives you an opportunity in a small window to make a difference and give yourself opportunities at the Aon Top 5 during the season. The Aon Top 10 doesn't work, and here's why. And we saw it last year. Aon Top 10 will be filled. That category is pretty much done by the time we get to June, because you're going to end up with a handful of first-time winners. They are going to take up all of those opportunities. And the ones who don't are the ones who just came up short, finished second at PGA National, finished second at in Tampa, whatever the case may be. So that category is pretty much done by the time we get halfway through the year. They need to find a better way to reorganize that category or expand that category would be my argument.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. At least don't have the overlap of players who have already won should be, I don't know, eliminated from that list. Just have a little bit of new fresh blood, a little bit new flavor, introduce new characters to the PGA Tour. Michael Brennan, the newest winner on the PGA Tour. And if you're looking ahead, Michael Brennan could be a singular talent. He could be a future superstar on the PGA Tour. Chances are there are plenty more players just like Michael Brennan who have given the opportunity could shine on a PGA Tour stage. And we look forward to introducing them to you. One other news item that's sort of Rex golf adjacent, sports specific, was something that happened last week in the NBA with Miami Heat player Terry Rozier arrested last week and accused of participating in what is essentially an illegal sports betting scheme. It certainly sounds, Rex, like it's essentially insider trading, where Terry Rozier had insider NBA information and he used that to help gamblers bets, particularly as it relates to player props, over-unders. If you are a PGA Tour executive, how much are you looking at this incident and this episode and having this serve as a wake-up call to make sure everything is in line as it relates to your gambling your anti-gambling program?
I have an answer, and I do think this is an interesting conversation to make. I want to pull back the curtain just a little bit and let everyone know how frightened you were of this particular topic. Not because you're a gambler, because actually you're not a gambler, and you don't quite understand. Even if you had insider information, I'm not quite sure you would know how to use it when it comes to gambling. Because you, as we've said numerous times on this podcast, neither you nor I are very good when it comes to the gaming portion of the game. It certainly is a concern for the PGA Tour officials long before this investigation ever came to light a day. And certainly the NBA is going to have their hands full trying to deal with this, because suddenly you have cast a shadow on that game, the NBA, the basketball, that you simply cannot have in this day and age. There is a reason why when the PGA Tour, along with pretty much every other professional sport, decided to get in bed with gaming. And this is all about money. The PGA Tour wants a slice of that gaming money. The NBA wants a slice of that gaming money. And it comes along with that, the dirty side of it. The idea that, yes, someone with a little bit of insider information could probably create huge problems for your league. It's the reason why, and I think I did some reporting on this when it happened, PGA Tour really went out of their way to make sure that everyone understood the rules. There were videos that players weren't allowed to watch. They had to watch. They had to sit down and be monitored while they watched this video and were explained in excruciating detail, hours-long video, of exactly what was considered insider information and what wasn't and what was allowed. And not just the players. We're talking about caddies. We're talking about spouses. We're talking about swing coaches, physios. Anybody that's in your universe, your manager, has to be involved in this. They have to sign off on this training and understand exactly. I was telling Trevor, my son, who is a little bit of a gambling degenerate, apparently, that I'm learning as we get further and further down the road. When this happened, he asked me how it could apply to golf. And I said, it's really easy. And I'll put it in context. If you and I are standing on the range, which is what we do at tour events, and we're talking to a caddy or a player, and the player sort of looks up and goes, that dude, he ain't playing this week. His back is bad. And you and I have had these conversations before with players or caddies and whoever else. If we turn around and pull up our DraftKings app and make a bet on unders for that player, and like it's a little bit different in golf, but certainly those exist, that would be violating the PGA Tour's policy. There would be huge implications that come along with that. Now, if I go to my laptop and I report it, that's different. The world has the information then. Everybody can make their decision on if they want to do it. It is a huge concern, because what the tour doesn't, what Brian Rolapp doesn't want, is what the commissioner of the NBA is dealing with now, and that's a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, and there's two separate issues with the NBA that are related, but they're also different. You know, this is separate from the rigged poker games that Chauncey Billups and others are allegedly ensnared in. It's this issue that has gotten Terry Rozier arrested. It's the issue with the former Raptor center, Jonte Porter. He was banned from the NBA, and he was awaiting his sentencing for his role in a gambling scheme that was related to these player prop bets. Those are the scenarios that are so ripe for manipulation. And I'm not suggesting in any terms whatsoever this is actually happening on the PGA Tour. But on PGA Tour, there is no injury report. There's no way to know if a Patrick Cantlay is dealing with a back issue, and maybe he is going to tee it up, maybe he's not. But you do have situations where, depending on your state, you can gamble in sort of a head-to-head format of, let's say, a Patrick Cantlay versus a Xander Schauffele. And those are a two ball, and they're playing together in the first two rounds of the Travelers Championship. And you can bet on who is going to perform the best, either in a single round or in a two-round total before they make the cut. If you knew an injury report with Patrick Cantlay and he was questionable or he was dealing with a back issue, chances are you would likely be hammering bets on Xander Schauffele to outperform him. And so in the absence of that information, or just sort of the mystery overall of how players are doing, maybe they're going through, you know, a swing change. Maybe they just fired their caddy. Maybe they got some off the course drama with their significant others. Like, there is so much mystery that doesn't necessarily happen in other sports. These scenarios are so ripe for manipulation that this should really serve as a wake-up call for the PGA Tour. Because, again, you don't want to have the same situation you have now in the NBA, where if you're a fan of the NBA and, you know, if you've followed on Twitter/X, all you see now are videos of Terry Rozier, who was booting the ball sloppy turnovers, missing shots. Like, you start to question the authenticity of the game and the results. And that is not a place you want to be if you're a PGA Tour tournament or the PGA Tour in general, just having sort of your results thrown into question.
No, I think you said it should be a huge concern, a major concern for the PGA Tour. I would say it should be a huge major concern.
Wake up call.
Every major sport should be dealing with this, should be concerned with this. The NFL is dealing with not this much of an issue as the NBA, but certainly the Lamar Jackson injury report over the last few weeks. Even the NFL is looking into that simply because there has to be the line for clarity has to be so obvious when it comes to injury reports. When is Lamar playing or is Lamar not playing? Like, stop jumping back and forth. We need to know sooner rather than later. Certainly for my fantasy football teams, I'd like to know, because Drake London is absolutely killing me this season going back and forth off the IR. However, I will also say when it comes to the PGA Tour, maybe other than tennis, there is no other sport where one person can influence the outcome more so than a golfer, because it's just you out there and you can decide, am I going to intentionally lay up here, or am I going to contentiously airmail the green, whatever the case may be? So, yes, PGA Tour officials should be wildly concerned.
Yeah, wildly concerned, certainly keeping an eye on things. Again, we have no reason to believe this is actually happening on the PGA Tour, but this also happened in an NBA game with hundreds and hundreds of players on an NBA roster similar to PGA Tour. There are a lot of players under their purview. Rex, Halloween is just a couple of days away. You'll be heading back from Connecticut to your home in Longwood, Florida on Thursday. What are you going to be for Halloween, and what plans do you have?
We don't dress up for Halloween. We have a big neighborhood Halloween party the weekend before, which didn't dress up. Actually, I dressed up as a clown. We very much mailed that one in this year. So there were some creative outfits. I'm not very good at it. However, we do, like, Halloween's big in our neighborhood still. We live in a neighborhood like yours, not quite Nocatee, but where there's a lot of kids. So it's always a fun night.
Yes, I do live in Nocatee, where everyone is either my age or just a little bit older.
Who are you dressing? What's your costume? What are you doing?
Not dress up in costumes because I'm lame. I actually don't like Halloween. I don't like to get scared. It's a little bit spooky. It's a little bit eerie. Certainly not my favorite. I'm a huge Thanksgiving guy. Also a big Christmas Eve fan. To me, I actually like Christmas Eve better than Christmas. We'll get to that in a couple months' time. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Halloween. My kids, though, my kids certainly are. Last year, a big hit. My son dressed up as me, Golf Channel reporter. My daughter, who is now 4 years old, last year dressed up as an Oompa Loompa, won every contest imaginable with best dress. This year, they're working in tandem for their costumes. Their characters from the movie Dodgeball. Looking forward to that one. We'll have pictures next week for the midweek show of that one. Wherever you are, I hope you have a great Halloween. Stay safe. Have fun. We'll be back next week. There are no tournaments, but don't worry. Rex and I will still have plenty to discuss whatever is happening in the world of golf. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf, aka golfchannel.com, which is newly relaunched. Thank you guys for checking all of that out. Hope to have much more on the website and other things coming soon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys in November.